Hello and welcome to Databook. I am Jack Murtha.
And I'm Tom Castles. This is an Inside Digital Health podcast. If you haven't checked out our new site, be sure to. It's at idigitalhealth.com. We're also on social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. You could find us there as well.
So if you like this podcast, please remember to rate, subscribe, review, and tell a friend.
We have a pretty exciting podcast for you today that ends with our newest peer exchange. I think you may have seen these before, folks, but this one is our favorite yet.
So it's a panel discussion, and this time we are diving into physician burnout. And we have a star lineup for you today. We have Rasu Shrestha, who you know is a health IT expert, one of the leaders in the field, Geeta Nair, Janae Sharp, Heather Lavoie. All four of these people are huge names in the industry doing big things, and you probably already know them.
So hang out. You're going to hear the insights that they had to give later on in this podcast. But before we get there, let's jump into today's story. We're bringing you all the way back to October 4th, 1892. It's a warm, dry, early fall day in Minneapolis.
We are at the University of Minnesota, and there's quite the crowd here. School officials, doctors, students.
It's a pretty big day. The university's brand new College of Medicine and Surgery is celebrating the opening of its first building.
But the headline, the reason why we're talking about this otherwise forgotten day, is the person who's about to speak.
And that is Sir William Osler. You might know him as the father of modern medicine.
By 1892, he has about 20 years in medicine under his belt. He has already chaired clinical medicine at Penn. He's co-founded the Association of American Physicians, and he is physician-in-chief of a very young Johns Hopkins Hospital.
But Osler is also respected for the way he reads, writes, and talks. He's sort of a KOL, or more accurately, the KOL of his time.
And he built his reputation partly because of an earlier speech in which he hammered home the need for physicians to be calm in the face of chaos, for them to keep their emotions in check, to be tolerant.
So today's speech, this ceremony, is a big deal for Minnesota's budding medical community.
It's also happening at a time when medical education and medicine itself are changing. And Osler, the person who's about to take the stage, is kind of at the forefront of this shift.
So he delivers this speech titled Teacher and Student, and immediately begins bashing the status quo. Sure, he says, medical schools are becoming more rigorous and scientific, more formal.
But a lot of them still lack laboratories and proper equipment. Most don't have very enthusiastic or highly skilled teachers. And the doctors who do teach make such little money that they have no choice but to take on other work.
To Osler, all of these factors erode medical education in the U.S. They disadvantage doctors and patients. This mess even, you know, it harms clinical research too.
So this isn't a perfect comparison, but in a lot of ways, Osler's speech precedes a line of feeling about medicine that we often hear today.
The system is just broken.
So this hopeful, festive crowd is watching Osler drop bombs on American medical education. But then he lays out a path for up-and-coming doctors to actually succeed in healthcare.
And it's all rooted in learning, morals, and humility. The kind of qualities that we all want doctors to have.
But it's all about the individual. Toward the end, Osler says this.
Always seek your own interests. Make of a high and sacred calling a sordid business. Regard your fellow creatures as so many tools of the trade, and if your heart's desire is for riches, they may be yours.
But you will have bartered away the birthright of a noble heritage, traduced the physician's well-deserved title of the friend of man, and falsified the best traditions of an ancient and honorable guild.
Yeah, it's a pretty heavy one, huh?
Yep, just a little bit.
And I guess that's what's so interesting about Osler in his speech. In the same breath, he condemns the structural forces weighing on medicine, and then seems to place responsibility for their effects on the individual doctor.
Yeah, so think about it like this. He basically calls doctors who chase money sellouts, but he concedes that teaching medicine isn't enough to support a family.
Is it really the doctors themselves, or is it larger market forces that make a sordid business of a high and sacred calling?
Exactly. But look, Osler's focus on the individual also bubbles up in more encouraging ways sometimes. A few years after this speech, for instance, he helps found Johns Hopkins Med School, and he is instrumental in bringing medical education out of the ivory tower and into the hospital.
Osler goes on to pretty much establish medical residency, cementing his spot in healthcare history.
So through all of this, he is getting doctors in the wards with patients, doctors to be in the wards with patients. It is about connection. And he's also touting dedication to the job, to patients, to strict moral and occupational values. And he institutionalizes these things, for instance, by having residents live and sleep in the hospital.
This is why we're talking about Osler on an episode about physician burnout. In one sense, he gets what makes most doctors feel fulfilled. It's time spent with patients, the ability to dig into their medical histories, to really practice medicine.
And he also understands how a poorly built system can grind doctors down, how it can hurt patients and the institution of medicine at large.
But at the same time, Osler is quick to blame physicians for not adhering to his expectations, even in this perverse system.
And even more interesting, he essentially gives birth to the medical residency program, and he makes it a total and seemingly endless slog. It's like a monastery. It's all work, no play.
It's exactly the kind of thing you would think would cause physician burnout.
And while residency programs have drastically changed throughout the years, we all know today that they are where burnout begins.
Let's be clear. We are not saying Osler is medicine's great hero or the root cause of physician burnout. So why did we look at him in the first place? Well, when we look at Osler, we see nuance.
Keep in mind that this is a guy who made immense contributions to medicine. And he also advocated for using chloroform to euthanize senior citizens.
So there's that. But this lesson in nuance doesn't end with Osler. He's an example, a symbol of how one person, one field, can produce some great ideas and some very questionable ones, too.
And certainly, Osler advocated for changes that would emphasize the joy of medicine. And he also pushed for things that really might cause burnout.
In a strange way, it's kind of like technology. Electronic health records have opened up a trove of actionable data, and they've even been shown to modestly lower mortality rates over time.
But they're also a huge source of burden. They take doctors away from the patient and away from their families. There's no denying that EHRs contribute to physician burnout.
Well, EHR vendors might have a thing or two to say about that, but for the most part, health IT seems to have a very firm grasp of nuance.
Yeah, good luck finding the HIMSS attendee who says technology is absolutely terrible for medicine.
Or conversely, the person who says technology only benefits medicine and clinicians.
So on this episode of Databook, we are embracing nuance in all of its puzzling, thought-provoking glory, and we're using it to spark a unique conversation around physician burnout.
We already know that it's a huge problem. More than 40% of doctors say they feel burned out.
And we already know that technology, specifically the EHR, is linked to physician burnout.
So, what if, instead of focusing only on this significant problem, we began to explore solutions?
And not just any old fix, but technology. What if we could leverage cutting-edge tools to fight physician burnout?
That's the discussion topic we posed to four health IT experts on our latest peer exchange. And today on Databook, we bring you a portion of this invigorating talk.
We've got Janae Sharp, founder of the Sharp Index, which aims to end physician suicide caused by burnout.
Rasu Shrestha, he's chief strategy officer of Atrium Health and a top voice in health IT.
There is Heather Staples-Lavoy, president of Genea. That's a health data vendor that also measures physician burnout.
And moderating this great talk is a top 100 health IT influencer and one of the most powerful women in the field, a good friend of ours, health tech exec and host Gita Nair.
So after learning that a problem exists, the next step is to really measure its scope. What would you say is critical, aside from technology? You know, is it the culture? Is it attitudes? What is it, Rasu, that kind of makes this such a difficult topic?
You know, Geeta, it's really important. This topic of burnout is so real and so prevalent really across the board. And I think the number one thing that we really need to get our arms around is really the mindset, right? We're not ready in large parts to admit to the fact that the very people that are healing our patients are actually hurting right now. And the mindset around how we might be able to address that notion, that reluctancy to really admit to the fact that we have a major problem going on. That's what we need to get our arms around. You know, the fact that the God complex that oftentimes exists with physicians, and it's bidirectional, and it's not, I'm not saying this in a bad way, but physicians are expected to heal. And physicians, conversely, expect their patients to obey and to understand what they're saying and to listen to the protocols and the prescriptions that they put on the table. And in that God complex, you know, this notion that, oh my goodness, that physician, the healer, could actually be hurting, we need to get around that.
Yeah, those are some big words, Rasu. Would you agree with that, Heather? Do you think that the mindset is one of the biggest problems in the system today?
It is. I mean, I certainly think that physicians are viewed as a sort of invincible, and because they tend to be workhorses, they take on so much, and sometimes I think they have been a bit reluctant to maybe admit that the burden that they've been bearing is too great. It sort of, I think, admits they, or maybe it feels a little bit like admitting to failure to a certain extent. And yet, I think the burden that we've placed upon them is just unnecessary, and it really is too great. And we've asked them to do so much more than really is expected as part of clinical practice. I mean, we've kind of relegated their role to be data entry clerks, which I think certainly dehumanizes them to a certain extent. It diminishes their sort of importance in the organization. And so I think it's not only extra burden on them, but also I think it really undermines the all of the training that they, you know, have pursued in their entire career.
You know, I totally agree with you. No one really feels bad for physicians, right? They're kind of held to this pedestal and are supposed to be perfect in many ways. Janae, I know you've done a lot of work on measuring burnout and metrics. Can you share with us your thoughts on some of these things?
Yeah. I think it's important to think about it too, because we talk a lot about burnout, and some people also call this phenomenon of not really being able to meet your expectations like the moral injury. Like, is this burnout? What exactly is going on? And we know when we're talking about someone's mental health, like, how are we really measuring this? And nobody wants to look at it and say, oh, like on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm like pretty burned out, which means I'm bad at my job. And quantifying that is difficult. We know that what gets measured matters in healthcare. And in some cases right now, that's a billing code. And the challenge for everyone is to say, okay, we know something's wrong. How do we measure this appropriately? How do we look at it? What matters? And that's a lot more challenging. I know I've said challenge like 5 times. It is like just a giant challenge to say, how do you say, how much of a moral injury do you have?
After you measure it, right? I love that. Once you measure it, it matters. So once an organization has measured it, what's next? Rasu, Heather, what's next?
Yeah, what's really interesting is, you know, there are measurements out there. And what we've seen time and again is that the magnitude, the depth, the gravity of physician burnout, and it's not just physician burnout, by the way, it's clinician burnout across the board. They're nurses, the frontline, you know, clinicians that are interacting with our patients, that are helping physicians perform better. They're burning out in droves as well.
And but people feel bad for nurses. They don't feel bad for doctors,
that
right?
Is true. Well, that's true. That's unfortunate physicians we are. But it is a prevalent matter, a matter that is prevalent really across the board. And, you know, I read somewhere that over 60% of clinicians have some form of burnout. And out of those, over 10% have some form of mental health challenges.
I totally believe that. You know, it's interesting when I say that no one feels bad for the physician. You're right that folks seem to understand that the care team can get burned out, but somehow the head of that care team, being the physician, is supposed to be, you know, agnostic from what the rest of the team is feeling. Heather, what are your thoughts on, you know, once you've measured it, once you've looked at it, you know, what do you do then? What is an organization supposed to do after that?
Sure. Well, certainly I think that, I mean, not just the organization, but I think, you know, as we look at maybe what are some of the contributing factors to getting to this point, right? So we've had physicians for, you know, centuries, and yet it seems to be only at a sort of an epidemic point currently. And so what has changed? And I think some of what has changed is the process by which they conduct their work. And so, you know, if we think back even to, you know, not that many years ago, but certainly even into the 90s and in the 80s, to do a history and physical exam was a relatively straightforward exercise where you could run through sort of a record of systems, record that fairly simply, verbalize that, have a transcriptionist take all of that down, and code it sort of fairly naturally. And that worked as part of a physician's workflow. And then there wasn't a ton of afterwork associated with that. But today, I think with certainly now that physicians are using electronic health records, and electronic health records are still relatively new in the scheme of things, they're to a certain extent fumbling their way through. Doing a history and physical is a lot more complicated. They're actually having to, you know, code after the fact. The accuracy of their coding is used in a very different way than it ever was before. And so if I, you know, I think if we look at from an organization perspective that maybe employs physicians or has launched an electronic health record, you know, taking some of the pressure or understanding some of the pressure we've placed on physicians, and what might we be able to do to lessen that burden. And I think leading up to an EHR implementation, I think the go-live point has always seemed like the final point, right? There's been some dispensation for physicians in terms of sort of relaxing some of the visits that they, the production that they might have had to be focused on leading up to that point. But after go-live, then it's all systems go. And not recognizing that the real work happens after go-live, and that's when physicians are really left struggling in how is this my new reality? And so understanding that that burden is still great, that physicians are fumbling through the electronic health record. So what can be done? Is it that we really need to look at what we're expecting in terms of production on physicians on a databases and relaxing that? Are we looking at how we might be able to help some of the afterwork? So I think really examining what is causing the challenges at an organization level, and then even from a health IT level, what can be done to resolve those factors that are causing this burnout?
So you bring up a good point, which is that we have so many advanced tools, so many ways to kind of analyze this information. Janae, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, there's so many different analytic tools that we've got out there. As it relates to burnout, cost, effect, how do you actually analyze all of this information?
I have a couple thoughts about that, because I've been really trying to quantify it more. And some of that is we've been trying to quantify it, even how much it costs, because people in healthcare speak money. So I wanted to be able to say, this is something that matters because it's costing you this much that it doesn't matter. And so we've looked at tons of tools. And one of the things that we noticed was when we're measuring things in terms of, like, there are multiple problems, so there's no one right answer, and there's not actually one tool that really quantifies it perfectly. And that's part of why this conversation is important too, because we have multiple things. The people who are burned out and have mental health issues, those people are less likely to accept help. They don't care anymore. There are some people who have burnout that don't have any mental health issues, and those are an opportunity for a healthcare system to recognize that something's wrong with their leadership, something's wrong with your systems. There are also people who are very healthy and burned out, you know, with tons of stress. So it's really difficult to say, what's the one answer? There's never going to be one answer, and that's why it's still a problem. If it was easy, these people aren't stupid, so they would have fixed it by now. But the trick is to connect with those people who are in the bottom quadrant, I say, like the at-risk people who are burned out and have mental health distress, where they're probably not going to make it in their job. And we don't know to what extent that will continue. So healthcare systems need to be able to look at the individual, but also at themselves. Like, what is it about our hospital that is so unhealthy? And that's why I say, like, there are so many opportunities to improve. There are so many things you can do that will incrementally improve things. And on a fundamental level, our technology, we're failing. Our technology doesn't make physicians' lives more joyful. So when you have a huge problem and technology isn't helping, you can change the technology.
Look, if you like this episode, rate, subscribe, review. Check us out online at iDigitalHealth.com, MedTechBoston.com.
And also come find us on our social handles. I'm at the Tom Castles, and Jack is at Jack Murtha.
So, I'm Jack Murtha.
And I'm Tom Castles.
And this is Databook.